Hey guys, welcome to By the Lyric. My name is Lisa, and this is the show where we look at song lyrics and analyze what they mean, especially the ones that are, you know, not just about your typical heartbreak, stuff like that, but maybe based on real events. So today we are looking at Feel It Still by Portugal the Man. Feel It Still was the second single from the 8th studio album by Portugal the Man, which was titled Woodstock. The song won the Grammy Award for the Best Pop Duo Group Performance at the 2018 Grammys, held on January 28th, 2018. So almost a year ago, Portugal the Man won a Grammy for this song. Someone asked on Genius, how does John Gourley, which is the lead singer, vocalist, and kind of leader of the group, how does he remember this song coming together? So he answered, I picked up this bass and started playing this bass line. Our friend Azat Cohn was back there hanging out and he heard the bass line. He had heard something in that, so he had me track this bass line. As I'm doing it, he's like, yeah, you got another part in there. You got like a bridge for me? And I was like, yeah, sure, I go this line. It's just the way songs should happen, in my opinion. Lay down some scratch vocals, just a rough vocal, which is actually, I'm pretty sure, that's what's on the performance too. The first two verses are just from that session. So, Feel It Still is a song of Portugal the Man. Portugal the Man is a band that's made up of lead singer John Gourley, bassist Zachary Carothers, guitarist Eric Hawk, keyboardist Kyle O'Quinn, drummer Jason Seacrest, I guess, and backup singer Zoe Manville. So the three people that actually have annotated and commented on the song, which we're going to be hearing from later on, are John Gourley, lead singer, Zach Carothers, bassist, and Eric Hawk, guitar. So just remember those names for future reference. And here's our first listen of Feel It Still. What a groovy track. I really like the upbeatness of this song. It really makes you want to get up and dance. Which is interesting because we're going to find out some things about the meaning of the song. So let's start with the first verse. It starts off, can't keep my hands to myself. Think I'll dust them off, put them back on the shelf. In case my little baby girl is in need, am I coming out of left field? So John Gourley commented and said, I have a little daughter named Frances. She's 5 years old now, six today, as he said this a year ago. Over the course of this album, she's obviously been growing up. She was 2.5, 3 years old when we started working on this record, and her growing up has been a huge part of this record, and I think this song especially. Some of that stuff just kind of seeped into the lyrics as I was writing. Personally, when I first heard the song, I thought it was about a man lusting for his lover or baby girl. But knowing that it's about his daughter, I think that this verse speaks to the fact that babies have this cuteness that we just want to interact with all the time. We can't keep our hands to ourselves. So what explains our impulse to squeeze or nibble adorable animals or babies? According to National Geographic, for some people, experiencing a strong emotion is followed by an expression of what one would think is an opposing feeling, says Yale University psychologist Oriana Aragon, who conducted a study on people's reaction to cuteness. So you may have tears of joy, nervous laughter, or wanting to squeeze something that you think is unbearably cute, even if it's an animal you'd normally want to cuddle or protect. That secondary reaction may also serve to scramble and temper their initial overwhelming emotion, thus bringing the person into balance. For instance, the 2015 study showed people who had such positive and negative concurrent reactions regain their emotional equilibrium more quickly. It's a go-get-it attitude, a 2012 study leader on the topic says, Hiroshi Natono. And such feelings can switch easily between positive and negative. Natono also doesn't think that the negative impulses towards cuteness is really aggression because the person doesn't want to hurt the animal or baby. Instead, the secondary feeling is more like disgust or keeping a distance from the object, Natono says. It's funny because I actually read an article a few years ago that said the reason why we want to squeeze or eat things that are cute is because that we weren't pre-programmed with a natural reaction to cuteness, which is why we kind of have this squeezing, eating type of thing. And I think that humans especially have the, you know, intelligence, emotional intelligence, to control this urge and not to actually squeeze or eat something because it's cute. However, my mom said that she had a hamster when she was growing up, and the mama hamster ate her baby. So maybe, animals actually can't control this impulse and do end up eating their things that they think are cute. Out of left field, in case you guys aren't aware, is an American slang meaning unexpectedly, odd, or strange. The phrase came from baseball terminology referring to a play in which the ball is thrown from the area covered by the left fielder to either home plate or first base, surprising the player that's running. According to MLB.com, though, there is another meaning. The term way out in left field is also taken to mean crazy. Cook County Hospital, by the west side grounds of the Chicago Cubs' first location under what is now the University of Illinois at Chicago College of Medicine, had a mental institution behind left field. The bottom line is, patients could be heard yelling and screaming things at fans behind the left field wall. It's interesting because that line can also speak to, you know, feeling crazy that you can't keep your hands to yourself from something that is really cute, or in this case, John Gurney's daughter. Welcome back to By the Lyric. For those of you that are just joining us, we are looking at Feel It Still by Portugal the Man. So far, we know that it's about his daughter. Into the chorus now. I'm just going to read it out for you first. Oh, whoa, I'm a rebel just for kicks now. So Zach Carothers, who's the bassist of the band, commented that that was the first lyric that was wrote for the song. Finding the first line, once you've got that, you just kind of go with it. It also reminded one genius user of the film Rebel Without a Cause. I'm a Rebel Just for Kicks is similar to Rebel Without a Cause. Rebel Without a Cause is a 1955 American drama film about emotionally confused suburban middle-class teenagers. It offered both social commentary and an alternative to previous films depicting delinquents in urban slum environments. The film stars James Dean, Sal Mineo, and Natalie Wood. It was a groundbreaking attempt to portray the moral decay of American youth, critique parental style, and explore the difference in conflicts between generations. The title was adopted from psychiatrist Robert M. Linder's 1944 book, Rebel Without a Cause, The Hypnoanalysis of a Criminal Psychopath. The film, however, does not make any references to Linder's book in any way. Warner Brothers released the film on October 27th, 1955. Sounds interesting. Might be go watch it this weekend. The next line in the chorus goes, I've been feeling it since 1966 now. So John Gurley, lead singer, commented, so 1966, I wrote this lyric mainly because it was the first year, like the acid test year. So the acid tests were a series of parties held by author Ken Casey, primarily in the San Francisco Bay Area during the mid-1960s, and it was centered entirely on the use of and advocacy of the psychedelic drug LSD, also known as acid. Kesey took the parties to public spaces and advertised with posters that read, "Can you pass the acid test?" in capital letters. And the name was later popularized in Tom Wolfe's 1968 book, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. Musical performances by the Grateful Dead were commonplace, along with black lights, strobe lights, and fluorescent paint. The acid tests are notable for their influence on the LSD-based counterculture of the San Francisco area and subsequent transition from the Beat Generation to the hippie movement. In Jefferson Airplane's song, A Song for All Seasons, from Volunteers, mentions the acid tests. The very first acid test was a party at Ken Babb's house on the 27th of November in 1965, followed by four more in the same year. So again, the first party was on the 27th of November in Soquel, California. The second was on December in San Jose, California. The third on 11th of December in Muir Beach, California. The fourth on the 18th of December in Palo Alto, California. And the fifth, way out of California, actually happened on the 24th of December in Portland, Oregon. So Portugal the Man's timeline was a little off here. After the first five parties in 1965, there were a total of 12 in the following months of 1966, 10 of which happened between January and March of 1966, and the last few were held at the end of September, right before LSD-25 was made illegal in California on October 6, 1966, and there was only one after the banning of LSD, and that happened on October 31st, Halloween of 1966. The following lines of the chorus go, "Might be over now, but I feel it still." So 1966 was over 50 years ago, therefore the era is over, but the artist feels nostalgic to the time still to this day. The next part of the chorus is, "Oh, I'm a rebel just for kicks now. Let me kick it like it's 1986 now." So Zach Carothers, bassist, commented on this, saying, "Kind of a straight-up reference to Fight for Your Right to Party, Beastie Boys, which came out on License to 3 in 1986. So You Gotta Fight for Your Right to Party is the full name of the song and is sometimes shortened to Fight for Your Right. It's by the American group Beastie Boys, and it was released as the fourth single from their debut album, License to 3, in 1986. One of their best-known songs, it reached number 7 on the Billboard Hot 100 in the week of March 7, 1987, and was later named one of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's 500 songs that shaped rock and roll. Might be over now, but I feel it still. Again, 1986 was over 30 years ago, but many artists, including Portugal the Man, still feel inspired by this revolutionary song. All right, welcome back. This is By The Lyric, and today we're looking at Feel It Still by Portugal the Man. So far we've had that the song is about John Gurney's daughter. It's also referring to the acid tests of 1966 and Fight For Your Right to Party by Beastie Boys in 1986. So we're into verse 2 at this point. The lyrics go, "Got another mouth to feed." This is most likely referring to the birth of his new daughter and how he needs to not only care for himself anymore, but for her as well. "Leave her with a babysitter. Mama, call the grave digger." After a detractor called the band out for an allegedly sexist line in the previous verse, the group took to social media to clear the air. Through Twitter and Instagram, lead singer John Gurney clarified that these lines have no deeper subtext and are literally written about his baby daughter. He specifically cited this line as a depiction of domestic living and what it's like to have a child to care for. Via Instagram comment, Gurley wrote on to explain, "Just some wordplay by a high school dropout that doesn't know what wordplay is." Merriam-Webster says that a grave digger is one that digs graves, especially as a means of livelihood, or one that is responsible for the end of something. Personally, I believe that Gurley is saying that once there is another mouth to feed, it becomes more difficult to support a family financially, therefore perhaps resorting to digging graves as a means of creating more income. Very kind of sad picture there. "Gone with the fallen leaves" is the next line. And John Gurley comments, "Am I gonna leave my daughter as she's growing up? Am I going to be leaving her with the babysitter? And then one day I'm just going to pass away, and like, how much time do I get to spend with her?" It could also be referring to the other meaning of gravedigger, the one who is responsible for the end, the one who is preparing the gravesite. Once the gravedigger has finished his business by burying him, he is now gone with the fallen leaves. And again, am I coming out of left field? All right, guys, welcome back to By The Lyric. For those of you that are just joining us, we are looking at Portugal the Man's Feel It Still. So far, we know that it's about his daughter, the acid tests of 1966, Beastie Boys, You Gotta Fight For Your Right to Party, and we just looked at the chorus. All right, so going into the second chorus, again, it's very similar, so don't think that I'm just going to be repeating myself here. It's similar, but also different. So the chorus, part two, goes, "Oh, I'm a rebel just for kicks now. I've been feeling it since 1966 now," which is exactly the same as the first chorus. But it's interesting because a Genius member asked, The first year of what? I don't understand. To which Zach Carothers, bassist, replied, the music then that inspired that movement and that generation was caused from social and political climates that are very similar to what's going on now. And Eric Hawk, who's drummer, also added, the riots that went down in Chicago as the start of the Black Panther Party. So let's talk about the Black Panther Party. The Black Panther Party, or BPP, originally the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, was a political organization founded by Bobby Seale and Huey Newton in October of 1966. The party was active in the United States from 1966 until 1982, with international chapters operating in the United Kingdom in the early 1970s and in Algeria from 1969 until 1972. At its inception on October 15, 1966, the Black Panther Party's core practice was its armed citizens' patrols to monitor the behavior of officers of Oakland Police Department and challenge police brutality in Oakland, California. In 1969, community social programs became a core activity of party members. The Black Panther Party instituted a variety of community social programs, most extensively the Free Breakfast for Children programs and community health clinics to address issues like food injustice. The party enrolled the largest number of members and made the greatest impact in the Oakland-San Francisco Bay Area, New York, Chicago, LA, Seattle, and Philadelphia. The Federal Bureau of Investigation Director J. Edgar Hoover called the Black Panther Party the greatest threat to internal security of the country, and he supervised an extensive counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO, of surveillance, infiltration, perjury, police harassment, and many other tactics designed to undermine Panther leadership, incriminate party members, discredit and criminalize the party, and drain the organization of resources and manpower. The program was also accused of assassinating Black Panther members. The Black Panther Party members were involved in many fatal firefights with police, including Huey Newton allegedly killing Officer John Frey in 1967, and the 1968 Eldridge Cleaver-led ambush of Oakland police officers, which wounded two officers and killed Panther Bobby Hunton. The party was also involved in many internal conflicts, including the murders of Alex Rackley and Betty Van Patter. Government oppression initially contributed to the party's growth as killings and arrests of Panthers increased in support among African Americans and on the broad political left, both of whom valued the Panthers as a powerful force opposed to de facto segregation and the military draft. Black Panther Party membership reached its peak in 1970, with offices in 68 cities and thousands of members, then suffered a series of contractions. After being vilified by the mainstream press, public support for the party waned, and the group became more isolated. Infighting among party leadership, caused largely by the FBI's counterintelligence program operation, COINTELPRO operation, led to expulsions and defections that decimated the membership. Popular support for the party declined further after reports appeared detailing the group's involvement in illegal activities such as drug dealing and extortion schemes directed against Oakland merchants. By 1972, most Panther activities centered on the national headquarters and a school in Oakland, where the party continued to influence local politics. Though under constant police surveillance, the Chicago chapter remained active and maintained their community programs until 1974. The Seattle chapter lasted longer than most, with the breakfast program and medical clinics that continued even after the chapter disbanded in 1977. Party contractions continued throughout the 70s, and by 1980, the Black Panther Party had just 27 members. The history of the Black Panther Party is controversial. Scholars have categorized the Black Panther Party as the most influential Black movement organization of the late 1960s, and the strongest link between the domestic Black liberation struggle and global opponents of American imperialism. Other commentators have described the party as more criminal than political, characterized by defiant posturing over substance. So that's just a little description of the Black Panther Party and its history. It's really interesting because I have just finished watching the first season of an Amazon Prime TV show called Good Girls Revolt, and they actually touched quite a good deal on this topic of the Black Panther Party. Good Girls Revolt is set in New York in 1969, and one of the assignments, the setting is a publication, a magazine called News of the Week, and one of the reporters had an assignment to go cover the Black Panther Party because they believed that the FBI was inflating crime statistics in order to paint the Black Panther Party in a negative light and to kind of take them down from power, which is something that you see happened here. It's true. COINTELPRO was counterintelligence program that was aimed at kind of breaking down this party and eliminating it. Let's get back to the chorus. So the rest of the chorus is the same. Again, we started off, just to remind you, ooh, I'm a rebel just for kicks now. I've been feeling it since 1966 now, which now we think is relating to the Black Panther Party of established in 1966. And then it goes, might have had your fill, but you feel it still. Ooh, I'm a rebel just for kicks now. Let me kick it like it's 1986 now. Might be over now, but I feel it still. So Jonathan Gurley also commented saying, with our lyric changes in the chorus, it is very subtle stuff, and it's something that we tend to do quite a bit. I think it's important, especially being a rock band, in a way, to have this fluid movement that isn't held up. You're not hitting that wall of, here's the block, here comes the chorus block. And that comment was a little bit confusing to me, but what I think he means is the fact that in the first chorus, the line is, might have had my fill, but I feel it still. Versus in the second chorus, the line is, might have had your fill, but you feel it still, which may seem like the most subtle and insignificant change, but I kind of see how this can speak volumes. For example, when talking about Black-focused political movements, one common comment from African Americans is white folk trying to take the narrative away from them. The Washington Post has an article titled, "It's Time to Stop Talking About Racism with White People," where Zach Lindley starts by saying, as reports of police overreach and brutality in the Black community become more and more commonplace in mainstream news, many Black people are feeling a strange combination of frustration and relief. Relief because the shootings of unarmed citizens have become part of a national discussion, but frustration because time and time again we hear the same dismissive and deflective responses from white America, such as, there must be more to the story. If you people would just do what you're told. Cops have a hard job. White people get shot too. He was just another thug. Good riddance. Why do you people make everything about race? What about black on black crime? All lives matter. He also continues to say, I've grown too disillusioned to be relieved and too numb to be frustrated. I'm just tired. I'm tired from sacrificing millions of once healthy brain cells reading through the comment section of race-based web articles, thread after thread, chock full of black folks trying to navigate oblivious whiteness. NBC also has an article on why it's so difficult for white people to talk about racism, written by Robin DiAngelo. DiAngelo states, as a white person, I was raised to be racially illiterate. On the rare occasion in which race came up in school or professional development, we typically studied them, not us. I learned about their histories, struggles, and triumphs, but consistently left off the table was one question. Histories, struggles, and triumphs in relation to whom? Take Jackie Robinson's story. Robinson is celebrated as the first African-American to break the so-called color line and play in Major League Baseball. While Robinson was certainly an exceptional baseball player, framing the story this way depicts him as racially special. The subtext is that Robinson was the first black athlete strong enough to overcome the barriers preventing blacks from competing with whites. No black athletes before him were skilled enough to do so. While this tagline elevates Robinson as an individual, it implicitly positions African Americans overall as inferior. It also falsely propagates the belief that racism in sports ended with Robinson, implying that current struggles against racism in sports are unnecessary. Such narratives of racially exceptionality obscure the reality of ongoing institutional white control, while reinforcing individualism and the illusion of meritocracy. Importantly, These narratives do whites a disservice by promoting racial illiteracy, leaving us with simplistic explanations for racial inequality. By not naming what those barriers were, who put them there, and how they were removed, we are also denying much-needed anti-racist role models. In Robinson's case, these role models are the white people who actually changed the rules and opened professional sports leagues to African-American players. So I'm going to go back to this show that I've been watching, Good Girls Revolt. In season one, episode six, this is kind of the setting of what's going on, and then I'm going to play the clip for you guys so you can hear it. At News of the Week, women want to be reporters and they want to write, but their employer is not allowing this. So the protagonist, Patty, has been recruiting women to join in and support her in filing a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and possibly even suing News of the Week if they don't comply with the complaint. In this scene, she is trying to convince Denise, one of the few black women in the office, to join her cause after Denise overheard some girls discussing the complaint process in the bathroom. The question Denise asks Patty leaves Patty speechless, and Denise turns to walk away and let that comment sit with her. Let's listen.
Hello, Denise.
Hello.
Gosh, no matter how crazy it gets around here, you never seem stressed.
I like when it's busy.
Me too. It's exciting. So, Denise.
Huh?
Cindy told me that you talked to you about how some of the researchers...
You shouldn't be talking about that here. I told Cindy I wasn't interested.
I know. I just thought maybe if you came to a meeting...
Of course I'll fact check those figures for you. I have a call into the Department of Labor already.
That would be a huge help. Thank you.
I'll keep your secret. But I don't have the luxury of believing in your cause. I am a black woman working at a white magazine.
A white magazine?
Your story on the Black Panthers called them the most important new organization in the struggle for black civil rights.
Right.
Did any black people have anything to do with researching, writing, or editing that story?
All right, so hopefully that gives you guys a little bit of an idea of what it's like to take the narrative away from black people. So I think, getting back to the lyrics here, by simply changing the perspective in the chorus from I to you, whether consciously or not, Portugal the Man is giving the narrative of the black movement back to the black people. All right, welcome back to By the Lyric. Today we're looking at Feel It Still by Portugal the Man, for those of you that are just tuning in, and we are all the way at verse 3. So the third verse goes, "We could fight a war for peace." Eric Hawk, drummer, commented, "Fighting a war for peace is like screwing for virginity. It's just banging your head into a wall over and over again. You're not going to win. It's doing the exact opposite thing that's going to get you to a better place." Fun fact, "Fighting a war for peace is like screwing for virginity" was apparently the original lyric placeholder, according to lead singer John Gurley. John Gurley also added, it is a George Carlin quote. So George Dennis Patrick Carlin was born May 12, 1937, and passed away on June 22, 2008. He was an American stand-up comedian, actor, author, and social critic. Carlin was noted for his black comedy and reflections on politics, the English language, psychology, religion, and various taboo subjects. He and his Seven Dirty Words comedy routine were central to the 1978 U.S. Supreme Court case, FCC versus Pacifica Foundation, in which a 5-4 decision affirmed the government's power to regulate indecent material on the public airwaves. He is widely regarded as one of the most important and influential stand-up comics. One newspaper called Carlin the Dean of Counterculture Comedians. In April of 2004, he placed second on the Comedy Central list of top 10 comedians of U.S. audiences. The first of Carlin's 14 stand-up comedy specials for HBO was filmed in 1977. From the late 1980s, Carlin's routines focused on sociocultural criticism of American society. He often commented on contemporary political issues in the United States and satirized the excess of American culture. He was a frequent performer and guest host on The Tonight Show during the three-decade Johnny Carson era and hosted the first episode of Saturday Night Live in 1975. His final HBO special, It's Bad for Ya, was filmed less than 4 months before his death. In 2008, he was posthumously awarded the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. In 2017, Rolling Stone magazine ranked him second behind Richard Pryor on its list of the 50 best stand-up comics of all time. The rest of the verse goes, "Given to that easy living, goodbye to my hopes and dreams, stop flipping for my enemies, we could wait until the walls come down." This lyric seems to paint a picture of ignorance to real problems in the world and giving in to the easier life, where one wouldn't have to worry about that. To start flipping for my enemies could mean that the person has given up any fight for justice and stopped caring if their enemies won. That's what Genius says. Another Genius user had the thought that when you read this in the context of the whole theme of the song, this is about hippies becoming yuppies. They are giving in to an easier life, conforming instead of rebellion, path of least resistance, and all that. Now they are working for the capitalist corporate machine they once railed against. Personally, I think that this is kind of referring to the fact that you either fight a war for peace, rebel for your inner peace, which seems counterintuitive, as we've mentioned before, or you give in to an easy way of life. You say goodbye to your hopes and dreams, and you stop twisting and turning any way you can to get around your enemies that stand in the way and only give you the option of war to grant you peace. Instead of going and taking the walls down, you just wait for them to come down on your own. Essentially, you can either contribute and be part of change or just wait around for change to happen. That song always makes me want to get up and start dancing. So for those of you that are just joining us, this is By the Lyric, and today we are looking at Portugal the Man's Feel It Still. We have gotten to the bridge at this point, so I'm going to dive right in. The bridge goes, "It's time to give a little to the kids in the middle, but oh, until it falls, won't bother me." So John Gurley, lead singer, commented on this, saying, "It's another one of those lyrics that just kind of seeps in. With all the talk right now of building a wall at our borders and the Berlin Wall, it was so much just like the image that you had in your head growing up, that these people are separated by a wall, and why do we need that?" Then the bridge goes, "Is it coming? Is 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 it coming back?" So again, John Gurley says, "It was the time when 1966, like, is that movement happening again?" I think what he's trying to say by this comment is, when looking back at the Black Panther movement of 1966 and the 70s and comparing it to the Black Lives Matter movement of today, we can see many parallels. After all, history is doomed to repeat itself. All right, so welcome back to By the Lyric. Today we're looking at Feel It Still by Portugal the Man, for those of you that are just tuning in, and we're just getting right to the end of the song here. So this is the first time that they kind of have a pre-chorus, and the pre-chorus goes, "Oh, whoa, I'm a rebel just for kicks, yeah. Your love is an abyss for my heart to eclipse now. Might be over now, but I feel it still." So to me, this is kind of the only point of the song which seems to get a little bit romantic. And this is actually my favorite lyric of the whole song. Personally, I picture a canyon with someone flying over it as if they are eclipsing the abyss of love. If this is still relating to John Gurney's daughter, then it could be how he imagines protecting her, always watching over her love and making sure that her love remains safe. All right, guys, welcome back to By the Lyric. today we are looking at Portugal, the man's Feel It Still, and we've just gone through all of the words, and I just wanted to make a quick comment on the music video. So just to describe how the music video goes, John Gurley, lead singer, first staggers into a junkyard, and all of a sudden it seems as though he is at a party. While this seems to be referring to the acid tests, there is a lot of American toys, specifically a tank with an American flag draped over it. Someone punches him, and then chalk is drawn around his body, possibly insinuating that he did not survive the acid test and has passed away with the fallen leaves. We see many different characters join him in the junkyard, such as two older gentlemen in suits on motorcycles, two white people all in white dancing, and someone with a white baby mask, also dressed in white. All of a sudden, a sharp drop in the music shows us a black person dressed in all black, followed by another black person with an orange sweater, yellow hat, and a black jacket. Then we see the black power symbol, followed by a man in a turban reading a newspaper that is on fire. The video ends with John watching something and the sounds of "fight back" being chanted as if he is sitting back and watching a protest. John Gurley staggers into the junkyard where the American dream, the stars and stripes painted on a tow truck, rusts away. He doesn't care. However, there is also a second interactive video with hidden links listed on Portugal the Man's website, feelitstill.com, to ways they think people can still make a difference. That transforms a study in apathy into social commentary. Nothing in life, especially not apathy, should be done just for kicks. You have to care, and furthermore, you have to have a reason to care. So here is our final listen of Portugal the Man's Feel It Still. All right, guys, so that's everything for me. Again, this was By The Lyric. My name is Lisa. We air every Thursday from 4 to 5. And if you're interested, I'm also on air tomorrow, Fridays, from 10 to 11 p.m. for a Friday night live show. I hope you guys have a good weekend. And if you have any other song suggestions that you would like me to kind of do some research on and make an episode about, don't forget to tweet it at Radio Laurier or send a direct message on Instagram, again, at Radio Laurier. All right, enjoy your weekend.